to the Nuts and Bolts Show on Rant Radio with your hosts Liquid Blue and Mr. Echo. And we'd like to introduce ourselves here for our promo to Smokey. I'm Liquid Blue. My real name's Chris Gilbert. I'm out of Peoria, Arizona. I'm a software engineer, hopefully going to be employed again here soon.
This is Mr. Echo. I'm living here in Southern California. I'm a PHP and Java programmer. And back to you.
All right. And I'm going to go ahead and talk about my setup here a little bit. My machine is a dual Athlon MP 2800 Plus, 2 gigs RAM, using 2 sound cards for all my mixing, regular SB Live cards, using Live Ice for my final out to Shoutcast stream, and that's about it.
For my setup, it's a Pentium 4, 2 gigahertz, gig of RAM. We're using Skype for streaming between the two machines. Other than that, it's pretty standard setup.
And if you notice a little bit of background noise, like whirring or some little bit of like a static popping, that's because there's some problems with Skype to Linux still, and its decoder isn't quite up to par with what the Windows one is. Hopefully we'll have that resorted out soon with the new versions of Skype for Linux coming out and some other things. All right, I'm going to go ahead and go over the goal of the show here. The goal of our show is to teach people about computer hardware, networking hardware, and operating systems, and really get into the gritty, quote-unquote, nuts and bolts, no pun intended, of those relative things, to really teach people about what the machines are, how they work on the insides, you know, the real things behind everything, instead of just looking at it all from a perspective of, oh, well, it's just a computer, this big, scary machine, not quite really sure what's going on.
Yeah, a lot of people out there, just the only way to really put it is they don't get it. There's a lot of people in the Rant Radio channel and people that I meet in real life that don't really get computers. I mean, they can check their email and such, but they don't know exactly what's going on.
Right, and I think that's really a big problem, because when people really understand what's going on behind the machines, they're able to use them more effectively. They're actually able to harness the power out of the machine that they're using and make it do things that they would have been unable to do otherwise.
So what we're going to be doing is some networking hardware. A lot of users are starting to understand home networking and such, and what you can actually do with it and the power behind it, but they don't really understand the nuts and bolts, per se,
right?
Between like a hub and a switch and a router and other components.
Right, I mean, they don't understand. I mean, well, it's the switch and the hub, they do the same thing. I mean, they both mean I can get onto my internet. No, they're not the same thing. They do totally different things. They provide the same type of functionality, but the way they work is totally different, and they're for different applications. And people, we really think, should know things like that so that they can take better advantage, make smarter purchasing decisions, you know, and really be on top of the industry rather than kind of bending and moving to whatever, you know, big ad comes out in the paper today with what's on sale.
Also, what we're going to be doing is describing and telling people about different operating systems for, say, like Linux, BSD, even Mac.
And absolutely, and really, and not just going with the whole open source zealot, you know, oh, well, this is free, it's Linux, it's not Windows, you should use it. No, I mean, we're really going to explain what the advantages are of both, what the problems are. That gets looked over a lot. People are like, well, this is Linux, it's great, all these other things. Well, sure, it is Linux, it is great, and it has problems, just like BSD, just like Mac, and just like Windows does. And we're really going to give a somewhat non-biased viewpoint on this and really explain to you the pros and cons of both, how each of them work, what some of the technological advantages are, and kind of let you make up your mind on your own as to what you think is superior and what you think is inferior.
Yeah. The biggest problem that I see people not moving over is games. I'm going to try to address that as much as possible. There is some new technology coming out, so we'll try to cover that and hopefully convince people to switch over.
And on top of that, with the games issue, there are some games that are supporting Linux now that a lot of people don't know about. Doom 3, all the Unreal games, a lot of the Quake-based games, Neverwinter Nights. So if people can really know that there are games out there for Linux, then people can say, well, I can switch then, get those games, and by purchasing those games, you're really telling the publishers and the developers, hey, this is really a in-demand platform, and hopefully we can get some more convergence from other engines, like the Half-Life engines, also known as the Chaos Engine, or the Havoc Engine, excuse me, and some other things like that, to where we can try to help the movement and educate the people to get them to kind of adopt it for themselves.
Yeah. Alright, let's go ahead and go into our topic here. Why storage computers are bad?
Yeah.
Just horrible.
Yeah, store-bought computers are absolute piles of crap. You shouldn't buy them, and that's what we're going to tell you. One of the reasons that store-bought computers are so nasty is preloaded software which contains adware and spyware. HP is terrible for this. My friend bought an HP. He told him I'd build him his own, but he's like, no, I'm going to go buy an HP. I'm like, all right, fine, whatever, I don't care. He buys it. Of course, I get called over to go set it up for him. I'm setting it up, and I run adware. Adware runs, and it finds over 70 spyware and adware objects. This system has only been plugged into the internet long enough to install adware. Okay, this thing is straight off the shelf from HP, and this thing already has 70 adware and spyware objects in it, off the shelf. And to me, that's absolutely disgusting. You're buying.
That's not the only company, too. And I mean, eMachine.
No,
too.
They're not. eMachines does it. Almost all of them do it because companies pay them to preload their software and crap on there. And I think it's disgusting. You're buying a machine. You're not buying, you know, a tool for them to harvest marketing research from you.
Yeah, that's why they're also so cheap too.
Right. And
I mean,
absolutely.
They drop the price because these people are actually paying off eMachine and HP to put the software on it, so it drops the price.
Right.
Of the whole entire computer.
Right. Absolutely. And another reason why it's so cheap is they use third-rate defective hardware. A perfect example of this with the back in the Celeron, you know, Pentium 3 days was the eMachines had this defective modem in them. It was a I can't remember the exact brand name. It was a 56K modem, but it was known defective from a design flaw, and it could never connect at more than 38.8 ever, period. But since it was built as a 56K modem, eMachines bought out all the stock of the defective modems, shipped them out, put them in all their eMachines, and all these millions of people got stuck with these crappy modems. And that's just an example of how they cut corners in order to get these machine costs so down to, you know, beat out the homebrew, you know, method of building.
Yeah. eMachine's not the only part of bomb. I mean, the old Packard Bells, HPs, Gateway, even some Dells have seen some really cheap parts.
Absolutely.
I've noticed in eMachines they used refurbished parts, and it's actually been proven too.
Oh yeah.
They'll actually take old hard drives that you like send back to them. They'll do in-house maintenance on them. On a brand new computer and put it back on the shelf.
Yep, and it makes you wonder, if it broke the first time, what makes you think it's not going to break the second time? The answer is, it probably is going to break the second time, probably in the same way it broke the first time.
Yeah, pretty much, they'll like replace rubber bands and stuff like that, and or just broken CD covers, CD drawers, and it's just,
yep.
It's nasty.
Yeah, it's disgusting. Upgradability issues. You know, these systems, you buy them, maybe Dell, for example, they have special RAM. And some of the Dell machines, the DDR.
Oh, the older systems do, anyways.
Well, no, this is back in the Pentium 4. This is a Pentium 4 1.4 gigahertz machine that did this. So this isn't too long ago. This machine's maybe 3 years ago. They took the DDR RAM. It had the same pinout, same notch cut into it, but the actual electrical pinout was different on the sticks that you could not swap. Dell RAM was not interchangeable with HP RAM or generic RAM or Gateway RAM or so on and so forth. You had to have special Dell RAM to use in these Dell machines, and that's just disgusting. You know, we developed these standards for a reason, not so that Dell can make one little change and then charge everybody whatever fixed rate they want for their particular, you know, branding of RAM.
Yeah. Packard Bell used to be real bad with that. Same with Compaq.
Yep.
The Compaq RAM, I know for sure that it was proprietary.
Mm-hmm.
I just hands down know they used proprietary RAM.
IBM did it too with some of their old systems way back when. So.
Also the motherboards.
Yeah.
Even the holes on the motherboards themselves are not even standard.
Absolutely.
To the ATX design.
Yep. Sometimes the form factors are different. Sometimes they use special proprietary power connectors. The component layout is specialized on the motherboard. The big issue is the BIOS. The BIOS and the actual chipset wouldn't allow for things like overclocking. It won't allow for certain types of CPU upgradability that you would get with a generic, you know, homebrew type building motherboard, like an 8-bit board or an MSI board. So you're really getting... And a lot of times they're more expensive, so you're getting... You could build a homebrew system that's more expandable, faster, more powerful, and overall a better system, hands down, no questions asked, for less money than you would be buying these HP or Compaq or Dell systems. And it's not that hard to build your own systems. I mean, you can look it up on, you can look it up on Google on how to do it. You know, you can get your A+ cert or read over the A+ documentation. It's not that hard. It's just not worth it.
Also, a lot of websites, they're actually build bare-bone systems, and I actually let you choose what components you want in them, and they'll actually build and test the system.
Oh yeah, for those who aren't familiar or aren't comfortable with building their own. And that's really cool. Now, I would stay away from some companies like Alienware, who started out like that, and then moved over to the more, you know, retail systems type things. Their systems are junk. I've heard all sorts of problems with them, even though they say they're so great and they're so expensive to reflect their quality. You know, it doesn't reflect their quality. It just reflects their checkbooks.
Yeah. I know for a fact that they overclock a lot of their machines. They push them to the extreme. And some, if you use low-quality parts and such, or even medium quality, you're going to really suffer the consequences.
Oh, absolutely. Another thing I'd like to touch on, which really kind of ticked me off, and this was first mentioned on the Sean Kennedy show, I think it was over a year ago, was that Dell PCs, for example, use third world prison labor. Okay? Inmates in third world countries are building those PCs. Do you want a PC built by you or a trained A-plus professional, or by somebody who's in a Nicaraguan prison trying to build Dell PCs to keep their costs down? I mean, this is absolutely ridiculous. I'm not saying these people, you know, these people may be great PC builders, but think of the quality and labor, and if the company's willing to stoop to that low to get better pricing, imagine what other corners are cutting with things like the power supply, things with the hard drives, you know, bulk buying known defective parts. I mean, it's just what happens, and it's absolutely disgusting.
Yeah, speaking of quality parts, the IBM, Death Stars, I think it was?
Yes, the GXP60s and the GXP40s.
I know a lot of OEMs were actually using those.
Oh, yeah.
Those hard drives were not designed to run 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And it said it in their documentation that they could not do it.
Yeah, and, I mean, there was a class action suit. It was known. I mean, those things got nicknamed the Death Star for a reason. I mean, didn't just happen on its own. They didn't just make it up. I mean, these were known defective drives. They were defective off the shelf. And just because IBM had this huge stock they had to get rid of, they couldn't sell them to stores. CompUSA didn't want to buy anymore because they kept coming back to them. So what do? They sell them to OEMs. They sell them to Dell. They sell them to HP. They sell them to Compaq. And they put them in their PCs, and now they have some great special going on at Best Buy. You know, that's just the way it goes.
Yeah. It's just overall cheap overall hardware. I mean, every single component they try to save money on, even from the monitors. The quality of the monitors are just crap.
Oh, yeah.
It's just amazing.
Dell monitors are notorious for breaking. I worked with the guy that, when I worked at the Peoria Unified School District, they were all Dell, all the time. And it was pretty much given that at a certain point in time, within 3 or 4 year span, that monitor was going to show up defective and it was going to die. You know, not within its, you know, mean time between failure rating. I mean, it was just going to die before that either way, just because that's the quality and that's just what they did. That's not acceptable, you know. I don't know when they got the idea that it was okay to build shoddy hardware because it would break and you have to buy new stuff. I mean, maybe it works for Microsoft in the software world. As far as I'm concerned, it's not going to work for Dell and HP in the hardware world. It is now, but as some of the costs are dropping and some third parties are coming out, I think it's really going to come back and hit them hard later on.
Yeah. Also, what I've noticed on some companies, what they're doing is, like, every 2 years, you can trade in your computer for, like, $200-$300. I'm not sure exactly what you get in return. You know, do they actually pull out your old hard drive, put in the new computer? I mean,
no.
What's going on there?
What they actually do is they, like, let's say you, I'm not sure the company that does it, let's say you're doing it with Dell, for example. You send Dell back your old PC. What they do is they give you a credit towards your next purchase. It's like store credit in their online store or whatever it might happen to be.
Ah, okay.
And what they do is they take the machine that you ship back to them. When you buy your PC, they give you a box, and you put yours in it and ship it back to them. And they take that machine, strip out any of the parts they can use, and then they use it to do things like educational donations to get tax write-offs. They use it for other low-end refurbished systems, like special deals on their website. So they're getting your next purchase, plus they're getting some equity back out of the old hardware that they sold you, so they're kind of making bank twice on it. It seems like a really great deal for everybody, but they're really the ones cashing out on it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, just cheap motherboards, even cheap mice.
Oh, yeah.
I've even noticed that.
Absolutely. You know, you're not going to get a fancy, you know, Logitech laser mouse with your pre-built HP computer. You know, you're going to get their cheap 2-cent HP laser mouse that doesn't work for a crap and it's going to break free after a year. You know, and that's just the way it goes. A lot of them also, they all ship with Home. Very few ship with XP Professional. And as we all know, XP Home's junk. You know,
yeah.
It's not worth a damn thing. you know, just overall the quality of the systems and the quality of, you know, what you're buying and the price you're getting. I mean, for a halfway decent HP, you're paying $1,700, $1,800, $1,900. You know, you can build a top of the line Athlon 64 3200 system with a Radeon 9800 Pro 512 RAM for, you know, $1,021. I just put the system pricing together, and if anybody wants to see it, I can show it to you. You know, you do it right off a new egg.
The main thing that really gets people is the tech support, per se.
Well, it's supported, it's warrantied. Well, home-built systems are warrantied, too. As a matter of fact, each individual component is separately warrantied, which puts you in a better position. The only thing you might have is that you're not going to get the tech support unless you buy from a system builder that offers you a warranty plan with it. But
Even with tech support, most of the tech support is overseas, and you can never understand the damn people anyway.
Hey, you know what they say? Put the disk in and reload it. Put the disk in, reload it. Reformat the hard drive. Reinstall everything.
Lose all your data. Yeah, we can't help you.
They can't troubleshoot your weird Windows problem any better than you can. I mean, there's just not... I mean, I can't even troubleshoot Windows problems over the phone that well because, you know, a lot of times they're just bugs or there are other problems that have caused because of other problem software and that, you know, adware, you know, stuff like that that's in your system. You know,
or just straight up DLL hell.
Yeah, or, you know, you pretty much tell them, reinstall the system, you know, reinstall Windows. That's the best way to fix a Windows bug is to reinstall the whole thing. You know, and you can do that just as well.
How many times have I done that?
Yeah, you know, you can do that just as well with a home-built system as you can with, you know, a HP system. You know, you put the Windows CD in, you install it. It's the same thing. You know, or you could take the even better step and you could format it and install Linux on it. You know, that would fix all your bugs. Imagine that, and you won't have to deal with it.
Yeah, really.
And
I tell you what, installing Linux does find hardware bugs. If you have cheap hardware, Linux will find it.
Oh yeah, it'll say, oh, you have a cheap Taiwanese NIC made, you know, 1,000 of these things, none of them work right. The company went out of business 2 months later, they got sued for a class action for defective hardware from OEM companies. And you have one, you know what, instead of writing a really crazy driver for this thing that doesn't work at the time, how about you just spend $10 and buy a new NIC that actually works? You know.
Yes, exactly.
That would make
Linux on OEM computers are kind of iffy. The way that they set up IRQs and other hardware settings and just the hardware off the wall hardware that they put in these things.
One really great resource is that a lot of these OEM systems, there's reports online as to what works and what doesn't work. If you look it up, go to Google, type in Dell on Linux, or Linux on Dell rather, or Linux on HP, or Linux on Compaq. And, you know, kind of hint your model number in there on Google, and you can probably pull up a report on your model system or a similar model system as to any particular problems you might run into Linux, their initial feel in Linux, you know, how it was working for them and things like that. So there are some pretty good resources out there for that, but it's still not going to work as well as it might work on a home-built system with standardized components.
Yeah, that's for sure. I know that from first-hand experience.
Oh, absolutely.
Because I'm actually using a OEM soundboard, actually. And some things just don't work.
Yeah, and a perfect example is laptops. Laptops have been notoriously complicated to get to work on open-source operating systems such as Linux and BSD. It just doesn't work as well as it works on a PC, and it's not because it's so much that it's a laptop, aside from the power management things, but just because the hardware is so weird and tweaked and complicated and non-standard in some ways that it's hard for the operating system to conform to all those little nooks and crannies that the laptop hardware tends to throw at it. You know, for example, my ThinkPad, when I first got it, it's an IBM ThinkPad X21, I couldn't install BSD. It would just not boot. And no, I couldn't figure out what was going on. It turns out that because of some oddity in the IBM BIOS, they had some special restore partition in the master boot sector area that I was trying to install my BSD operating system in. And I had to actually install Windows to patch my BIOS so that I could actually get BSD up and running. And that's just the kind of things that you run into, not just with laptops, but with quite frequently with other OEM systems. One thing they do a lot now is instead of shipping you restore disks, they take a portion of your hard drive that you paid for. Now, you bought an 80-gig hard drive, all right? But maybe you can only use 70 gigs because 10 gigs of this, they put this special system restore partition in, which exists there only to be there when something else in that system breaks.
Yeah. Along with that system restore, it's not just Windows. It's also all that spyware and preloaded crap that's taking up space on your own hard drive that you paid for.
Yeah, and they advertised for things like, oh, you get all these awesome software bundles. You get Microsoft Word. You get, you know, you get this, you get that. And you know what? You get Microsoft Works, okay, 9 times out of 10, which is a heap of crap, okay? It's not Office. It's not even close. It's their cheap version that they use for OEMs, and that's about all they sell it for now. You'd be hard-pressed to find it outside of an OEM to find Microsoft Works. I mean, that's just the way it is. So that just about wraps up our segment on why store-bought computers are bad. We want to thank you, Smokey, for listening to the promo, where we understand we're running a little bit short here. We're at about 22 minutes.
Trying to make a long one for you, but this is all we can come up with for right now. Our first show will be, we have it set up for how long. We already have laid out and everything, so.
Yep, we have a really good segment that we're not quite ready to present yet, which is why we didn't try doing it here, on distributed computing. Our first actual show segment is going to be everything that we just went over here in a much more cleaned up fashion, plus the distributed computing, plus the intermission, plus a little bit more expensive of a closing. But the distributed computing thing is going to kick ass. And we have some really cool news links, too, in relevance to the new IBM Power 5 architecture, which can run multiple OS at the same time, which is going to be a really cool thing to look into.
Yeah, we're still debating on that one.
Yeah, we're going to have to see what we're going to do with it. But thanks for listening to it, and we hope that you like it. We're a little bit under, but I hope you can look past that. So thanks, Smokey.
Yeah, thank you, Smokey.
And time for you to hear our outro. So,
bye.
And if you wondered, the background music we were playing was Ott. So if you want to check out any of the tracks, just go ahead and give me an email and I can hook you up with it. All right, thanks. Bye.
That's it.